Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. My name is Matt Christie, joined by John Dennan.
Hello.
When did we last sit down and record a pod?
It was a while ago, but I've had stuff on. Things have been quite busy.
It has been busy. It does feel like we've got a lot to talk about. Let's start off with the most recent events, which was the weekend. Anthony Joshua, Dominic Brazil. I predicted in the preview that it would be a similar fight to Charles Martin, and Joshua would win. I think I said within four rounds. Brazil was a lot tougher, and I think as a consequence, it was of benefit to Joshua. What do you think? You were there. I just watched at home, but you were there at the O2. You followed it, the build-up. You went to most of the press conferences, if not all of them, the weigh-in, etc., etc. How do you think the whole experience will benefit Anthony Joshua?
Yeah, I think he'll have taken a lot out of it, especially as, you know, it was a much more useful exercise because it went seven rounds than it would have been if it had been one or two rounds, which frankly, I thought he was going to knock him out in the first round. I thought on the night Brazil was strangely tough. Like, he hasn't exhibited that kind of a chin before. I thought his chin was a little bit suspect. Oh, I thought he'd been rocked in the amateurs and that kind of stuff. But he was resilient. But over the course of seven rounds, he landed very little on Joshua. Joshua was faster. His defence was good. He moved better. Brazil was just too slow off the mark and never figured out Joshua's jab. But it was Joshua's left hand that really hurt him. So overall, it was a good exercise for Joshua. Probably better than expected in terms of Brazil's resilience. And it gave Joshua the chance to show a little bit more. He's not the finished article, but we certainly had a lot more to see on Saturday than we have in some of his previous fights.
Some of the more cynical fans, followers, however you wish to categorise them, have suggested that Joshua carried Brazil for a few rounds in order to get a few rounds in and perhaps to appease any criticisms that it would be over. Very, very quickly. What do you make of that?
I mean, I don't think it's a dastardly master plan, because Joshua's not one to, you know, certainly as a pro, he's never been one to let someone off the hook if they've been hurt. But I think, but he said beforehand he was going to try and focus on control, not rushing it, and, like, you know, focus on defence, which I guess is what he was doing. He wanted to be sure he was. Just in command of everything before he went for the finish.
Given that he was in control, as you said, pretty much from the opening bell till the moment it finished, what do we know anything about Joshua that we didn't know before, given that the although you think you do have to commend Brazil for his toughness, for his gutsiness, but there wasn't a great deal coming back. But what positives can Joshua take from going seven?
Yeah, I think he has. I think we do. I think we have seen something. If you compare these seven rounds to the last time he went seven rounds against Dylan White, that was, like, you know, a hectic brawl. He, you know, Joshua got caught. He, you know, went for it hell for leather. He showed better pacing of a fight in these seven rounds, and I did think we saw a few, like, defensive flashes. We saw him slipping shots and, you know, moving out of the way and that kind of thing, you know, and I thought doing it pretty well for such a big guy, really. So I think we have seen a little more. It's not, yeah, there's still a lot, you know, like I said, there's a long way to go, but I think he has taken another step forward.
It looks likely at the moment it'll be Joseph Parker next, the leading contender with the IBF, of which Anthony Joshua rules. I was I was fairly impressed with Joseph Parga's last outing against Carlos Takam. Didn't think he was invincible by any means. I would certainly favour Joshua, but that is a step in the right direction towards Tyson Fury, David Haye, and the kind of fights that we want to see. Is it enough of a step, or will there still be quite a distance for Joshua to make up, or will it be, you know, will it be a shot for him to kind of fight to go from fighting Martin, Brazil, Parker, and then Fury?
I think there is a big gap between those sort of contender types and someone like Fury or Haye or Klitschko. But they're not a lot of, there's not a lot else you can do to bridge that gap. Maybe a Kubrat Pulev or someone like that, who would be another sort of step more advanced than Joseph Parker. But I think in and of itself, Joshua Parker is a good fight. I think Parker's quite exciting offensively. Like, should chuck more punches than Brazil, should be able to get more combinations going. Maybe defensively he's a bit suspect, but I think that's I think that should be a good fight. I like it.
I like it as well. I think it's the perfect fight at the moment for Joshua. I mean, for what it's worth, I thought Joshua was impressive with what he had in front of him. I didn't think there was any point, because with Joshua, it's always been, you know, what happens when he gets tagged, what happens when he goes a few rounds, and there was absolutely no sign of any fatigue or anything like that. And I just thought he did what he had to do very, very well. And I think it's quite fashionable for people to come out and criticise him, as people do. You know, no more venomous platform than social media these days. And I did see a lot of criticism for Joshua, but I just thought, what else really could he have done on Saturday night? And I think Parker is an excellent step for him. And then after that, I think if he performs as dominantly as he has been, then it's logical then to move up to Fury. The only thing is, I do remember Eddie Hearn saying after the Dillian White fight that Joshua needed more seasoning before he got to world level, and then obviously the IBF route presented itself, and absolutely, you know, that was almost genius that I think they had to accept that. But I would still be fascinated to see how Joshua will cope against someone like Fury, and we'll get onto what's going on with Tyson Fury a little bit later. I mean, who would you pick now after seeing Joshua against Brazil? You were there, Fury against Klitschko. Who would you pick if both were fit and at their best?
Out of what, Joshua and Fury?
Yes.
And I had to pick one. I think logically the favourite should be Fury, given his experience, his mobility for a big man. But if my life depended on the result, and you put a gun to my head, I'd pick Anthony Joshua. I think he's proven to be, well, he just seems more reliable. Fury seems very erratic. Is he going to be able to hit the same form he was against Klitschko again? Is he going to be?
No, we have to presume for this argument that he can. I know that presumption is quite difficult with what's been going on recently.
But so I can't, okay.
We
so
have to presume that Fury is as good as he can be.
Alright, well, maybe I'm crazy, but I'm going to stick with Joshua on the basis of Fury didn't actually, you know, neither Fury or Klitschko threw that many punches, and maybe if Joshua's more active, throw attacks in bursts and goes to the body, you know, I'm not saying he would knock out Fury. I think Fury's defensively is pretty good. Like, when he, you know, even if he gets tagged once or twice, but I think he might maybe outwork him for a contentious points decision.
Is there anyone out there that they could match with Joshua? Because, okay, he's done seven rounds twice now. We still don't know. Fighters can fall apart when he gets to 10 11 rounds. Is there anyone out there that Joshua could be matched with that would almost certainly take him 12?
Almost certainly take him 12.
Apart from Tyson Fury.
I mean, Fury's the most likely. I mean, Klitschko's been such an experienced champion that even though age isn't on his side and you think he's just might be a bit too old, it's hard to imagine anyone just steamrolling the, you know, an admittedly old but very experienced Vladimir Klitschko. Would he destroy Kubrat Pulev or Alexander Povetkin?
No, I don't think he would. Povetkin. Yeah. Povetkin would be an interesting one if Povetkin's had issues as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's that whole, his failed drug test, or I know his team is sort of getting legal on Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder seems tough. He gets caught though, but he does seem tough.
So we've mentioned Fury. We haven't mentioned Hay yet, but let's look at Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder against Anthony Joshua seems to me to be like a whole lot of fun.
Yes.
Who are you picking?
What, Wilder Joshua? Joshua again. My theory is that even though Wilder's a tremendous athlete, I just feel like Josh is naturally the bigger man. I mean, when Wilder was an amateur, he was at heavyweight, which is 91 kilos. I know he's very tall and very powerful, but Josh is he's like a proper super heavyweight in the way that sort of Klitschko and Fury are. I don't think their level of opposition, obviously Wilder's fought many more times, but he hasn't fought brilliant people. You're looking at Joshua on Saturday. I know it was just Brazil, so not exactly the highest caliber of opponent. But technically, I think Joshua seems quite good in the way he throws punches. And while Wilder's jab is good too, Joshua's is very good. And Wilder is wild. Those big sort of wide swinging punches. Maybe Joshua hits a little bit faster, a little bit straighter. But that's an awesome fight. But, I think it's starting to seem like Anthony Joshua is sort of the coming man of the heavyweight division, though there are a lot of questions that still need to be answered.
Is there a danger that Joshua is being overrated as a consequence of the ease with which he's won his last two fights?
Yeah, that's a risk, as in that he hasn't been put in situations where we've had to really see him he hasn't been in with boxers who have been that technically tricky. We haven't seen him with real awkward customers. So there's a lot, yeah. So there is that danger because he's looked so good destroying the guys he's destroyed. But then, Gennady Golovkin hasn't been up against the best in the middleweight division. We rate him very highly on the sort of the style of his performances and the way he's done the job. And Joshua's done the job extremely well indeed so far.
Okay, so let's move down the undercard. George Groves looked, for me, as good as he's looked since he got flattened by Karl Froch. I must admit, I did think we had seen the best of George Groves. There's been some kind of okay performances. There was a very disappointing performance against Badou Jack out in Las Vegas, and it was after that fight that I remember speaking to a few people and I thought, right, Groves is not going to go on to become the champion that many of us thought he was. That was almost set up for him to win that fight. And I thought he looked very confident beforehand, everything he was saying, and he was saying the right things, and then it just kind of all went wrong for him. But against Martin Murray, the signs that he could still win a belt at super middleweight. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. Because I think, until Froch delivered the sort of finishing blow in their second fight, I thought Groves was looking really sharp and on it in that fight as well, even though it was close with Froch. And he hasn't really looked that good since. But I thought this was a really good performance against Murray. Maybe not as sharp as Grove still can be. He got caught a few times, but then, you know, he hurt and wobbled Murray in a way I wasn't quite expecting. He's got that real sort of clean power. And I thought he did, you know, there have been a lot of questions about George's stamina. I thought he did pretty well in the second half of the fight. I didn't, you know, most people had him very far, or generally, and the judges had him quite far ahead on the cards. I thought it was quite a close one. I didn't think there was much between them in the early rounds, and a close one until the second half when Groves really showed that he could hurt someone late on. And I thought Murray was actually incredibly tough. Like, it would be a shame if this is like a sort of cut-off point for Murray when it comes to boxing at world level, but it's hard to see where Martin Murray goes now.
It really is tough to see where Martin Murray goes. I think, you know, Murray ultimately will fall a little bit below world level, I think, when we look back. The very elite, when we look back on his career. Martin Murray, wonderful guy, honest pro.
Because he's fought such good people. If he'd been up against less good world champions, he could be a world titleist.
He's been unfortunate with some of the guys that he's fought. And I think he deserves immense credit for some of the challenges he's taken on and accepted. But I mean, in the way boxing is at the moment, you can never, you know, Groves is a top 10, bona fide top 10 contender. Murray, he wasn't beaten out of sight or anything like that. So I don't think, in the way that boxing is at the moment, and that world title opportunities can present themselves from unexpected places, that we can completely write Martin Murray off. But I suspect that he isn't going to join the long list of British world titleists that we've boasted in recent years. Will Chris Eubank Jr. join that list? And is all this chat about Gennady Golovkin being next hot air? I spoke to Frank Warren last week. I'll get onto that as well shortly. Frank Warren, and as you can read in depth, it's a fascinating interview in this week's Boxing News, which is out now to buy on the newsstands or to download digitally, that Team Eubank are just basically asking for the biggest names without, and creating far, far, far too many obstacles and hurdles in the negotiating period for the fight to ever be really feasible. But because they're shouting that they want Billy Joe and they want Gennady Golovkin from such a high platform, the public is duped into thinking that that's what they want. That's Frank Warren's kind of take on it.
I mean, they are convincing when they say they want it. When, like, Eubank Jr. talks about fighting Golovkin, he seems to have complete faith in himself. I'm not saying I share that faith in him, or indeed most people listening do, or anyone listening does, other than his father. But there's something in it, in that, you know, they are quite close. They are quite close to making the fight. Literally, I think it's at a stage where the relevant papers have been drawn up. I think the Golovkin's team will do it. They just need Eubank's signature. But what gave me pause for thought was Eubank Senior started talking about, you know, on Saturday night, started talking about money, and the way he phrased it was the first dollar has to drop to the fighter. I don't know exactly what that means. Or if they want to get paid in dollars, which might be sensible at the moment.
Yeah, that's probably sensible.
So, you know, if I was a betting man, I would not bet on the fight happening, because they might be, you know, making too many demands of it. But it's there to be had.
I think if it happens, it's given Golovkin, who Golovkin has fought since he won his first belt, I believe, in 2010. Eubank Jr. is up there with some of the best that he's fought. I mean, I would not pick Eubank Junior to win, but I think if it was to happen, Eubank Junior would give it a good go, and it would be interesting and fun for as long as it lasts. And I'd be interested to see exactly how Golovkin and his team would deal with the characters of the Eubank family beforehand as well.
I mean, I wouldn't say he's up there with the best that Golovkin's fought.
Okay, so you've got Lemieux, you've got
Murray, Mack, then guys who had sort of been at world level, and Eubank Jr. hasn't been, but he is, I agree that he is better than some of the recent people he's fought.
Think you could put him on a par with, given his age and everything else, and the fact that he's probably in or around his best now, you could perhaps not have made that argument with Macklin. But David Lemieux, of course, was he proven at world level though? Okay, he had the win over Hassinan
Hassan the GKM. But at least he'd won a world title, as in, you know, there's some, you know, you could say that Lemieux, Macklin and Murray had all acquitted themselves well in world title fights. And Eubank's not at that level yet. He has just been operating at a sort of domestic level. But,
you know,
I'm not saying, but why not go for it?
I'd like to see it. And I think that given everything that he's been saying for such a long time now, and he was saying this before he fought Billy Joe Saunders, that he had beaten a Golovkin. And I do think it'd be fun. I think it'd be fun. But I just can't see a way that he'd win it.
I think it would be exciting. Well, I think the build-up would be fascinating, but I think there's only one winner in that fight.
The fact that the Eubanks have been saying so loudly and so regularly for 2.5 years now that they've got the beating of Gennady Golovkin, if they do go ahead with the fight,
fair play to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair play.
But equally,
fair play. But does that then perhaps suggest that they know something that we don't?
You know,
because they're going to have to face the music if they don't. They're going to have to face the music in the. There's going to be a lot of yolk in that egg that smashes on their faces at the end of that fight if they lose.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible they know something we don't. You know, it's possible that they were calling out his name for publicity and it's all becoming a sudden reality.
It's going to be, like you say, I'll believe it when I see it.
Because the problem is now, like, if they do take the fight with Golovkin, fair play to them, you've got to respect that. You've got to respect someone challenging the best. But if it ends up not happening, is anyone really going to blame Sky, like Eubank Senior was saying on Saturday night? I don't think so.
I think to the point that he's got now, to the noises that are coming out of Golovkin's camp, if this fight now doesn't happen, you've got to ask, and these questions have been asked for a while, but you really, really have got to ask some serious, serious questions at the Eubank camp. It's been documented elsewhere that the Billy Joe Saunders fight, which Eubank has said that he wants the rematch, was kind of there for him, and for which, of whatever reason, that didn't happen. If this doesn't happen too, then I believe that we are going to have to ask some serious, serious questions of the
Just the kind of way he's been managed. Because after all this, and it's so close, and it would be a massive fight, big money spending for everyone involved, if he ends up fighting, I don't know, Adam Etches on the undercard of Kell Brook in Sheffield, it's, you know, for the British title, it's not gonna look good.
No, okay. So, going back to the Frank Warren interview, it was just a case, as I do occasionally, I'll phone promoters up and just to see what's going on and everything else. And it's been a while since we've had anything from Warren in length in the magazine. And of course there was this whole thing with you know, Billy Joe Saunders in kind of in the background of all these negotiations. So I thought I'd give Frank a call. And yeah, he immediately mentioned that the Tyson Fury Klitschko fight was off, and this was an hour or so before it was public knowledge. He then told me about Liam Smith fighting Canelo Alvarez. You can certainly say it was an eventful conversation. So let's focus on the first bomb that he dropped. Tyson Fury will not be fighting Vladimir Klitschko on July the 9th due to a sprained ankle. He subsequently posted pictures of what looked like a very, very nasty bruise on his ankle. Certainly nothing that you could fight with. But since then, I mean, that's fair enough. These things happen. But then he goes over to France and has been filmed on more than one occasion. Really, really enjoying himself. Again, we can't knock him for that, but there was one video where he appeared to be jumping up and down in the street. Again, I'm not saying the injury was false, but this just doesn't look good, does it?
It's not a public relations masterstroke, unless you're one of the 200 people receiving a Jaeger bomb from Tyson Fury.
Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, it doesn't seem good. Shouldn't he be resting his ankle to getting it back as quickly as possible?
We spoke to Peter Fury, the results of which will be in the next issue, where we go into detail about this. Peter's kind of view on it, without giving too much away, was that he's kind of happy for him to go and blow off some steam, because when he gets back into training, he'll be focused on that. He'll be fully focused on training camp. But if your ankle is that bad, should you not be at home with one leg up?
Yeah.
Rather than leaping around with your top off buying Jaeger bombs?
Yeah. And it might sound boring, but is he doing the physio for it if he's out, you know, celebrating, watching the football?
Why is he celebrating? Why did he come home after Iceland knocked us out?
But if you've like sprained your ankles, if it's some ligaments or tendons that have been damaged, you know, I guess you need to let that properly heal, re-strengthen it, so it doesn't happen again, so it's not still weak. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of somebody else's injury, but I do know you've got to do your sort of rehab properly so further injuries don't happen. And, you know, he is a big man, you know, running around on it can't be, you know, it must be under a lot of strain and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it doesn't look good. But I mean, it also doesn't look good while there are these allegations from the Sunday Mirror saying that there's according to the Sunday Mirror, which didn't name its source, there were unacceptable levels of nandrolone in that had been discovered in his system, and you know, apparently, and that's being looked into. Fury's team not only said they'd defend him, you know, said deny all these accusations from the Sunday Mirror, and say they're baffled by them. In fact, so they're sort of mounting a strong defence, and I'm sure they will come out and say what they can say when the time's right. But it's all, you know, it all feels very unfortunate when ideally we're looking forward to a massive fight with Klitschko in a couple of weeks is now pushed back to a long distant memory.
Well, yeah, I mean, the dates on the table are October 28th, October 9th, no, October 7th, I think, are the two, or around that.
And it's sort of beginning and end of October.
Whatever the corresponding dates are of the weekends in October for those two. But, it doesn't look good. And those, you know, accusations that came out on Sunday were surprising. I mean, we can't say too much. I mean, Boxing News, we're confident that there is an investigation going on. We made calls to UCAD, to the British Boxing Board of Control,
And because they don't comment while something's ongoing, which is sort of natural enough.
From those conversations, we can say that there is an investigation ongoing, but we'll see what comes of it. And as I said in the column this week, whatever comes of it, I just hope that it's definitive. But it's concerning that. Obviously, for whichever way it comes out, it's concerning if these allegations turn out to be true. Very, very concerning, the world heavyweight champion. And it's concerning if they're not true, that the allegations came out in the first place and that his name can be tainted in this way. Yeah. We can't really talk about it anymore until we know what the situation is. But it is, I mean, it's a huge surprise, and Tyson Fury will always be Tyson Fury. I think seeing him out, he did seem to be having a great time while he was out there in France, to be fair. But there's almost something about Tyson Fury where you're kind of wondering. You've seen it with it's not just boxing, it's people that are suddenly hurled into fame, into the limelight, and how they cope with it. And for me, there's just something about Tyson Fury. He's a bit uneasy with the level of fame being world heavyweight champion has brought him. And I just think that it's probably just been a bit of a shock for him. And some of the things that he's said over the last 12 months. I mean, initially, you felt that certain publications were jumping on the back of him a bit too harshly, in that they were not aware of what Tyson Fury was like. He's been saying these things for years, let's face it.
And he's a more complicated character than a lot of sort of, like, say, you know, some writers in national newspapers really allow.
Yeah,
you know, and I think, you know, yeah, he does say things that he shouldn't say in public, but he's not malicious.
No, he's not, and that's the point. But should he? But there did come a point when he did it 2, 3, 4 times, you see his face in a camera, and he's saying something ridiculous again, maybe 4 months after the first time he said it, knowing full well the consequences of saying something like
that.
And it's that point where you think, oh, come on, stop now, just be quiet. I mean, the dealings I've had with Tyson, I've found him completely charming, very much enjoyed talking to him. I was a huge... I felt that what he achieved in November was kind of grossly underrated by the sporting media in this country. But where are we now? What, 8 months later? 9 months later? He hasn't fought since. I think you made the point in the office the other day that he certainly needs to be active.
This is the prime time in his career. He's had that huge win.
And also perhaps to keep him out of trouble.
Yeah.
And it's a real shame, because Anthony Joshua is the IBF champion, is enjoying the kind of glory that Fury should be enjoying. Fury's the one that went out there and beat Vladimir Klitschko.
He beat the number one in the division, yeah.
He's the one that should be enjoying all this. Yet he is very much the villain of the piece. Now, I'm not saying he's blameless, but I certainly think the next few months could be very, very interesting with the future of Tyson Fury. It's not too late.
No.
It's not too late at all for Tyson Fury. And this fight could be rescheduled for October. He might stop Vladimir Klitschko, fight with Anthony Joshua is then in the making, and happy days. But I do feel that there's worrying signs at the moment with what Tyson Fury is doing.
Yeah, and I think fighting is important for a fighter, and especially for a fighter like Tyson Fury, who's so, you know, mercurial, as in, you know, he's got, you know, he's fearless, you know, he had no fear of fighting Klitschko in Germany, but he also does and says what he wants when he wants, which isn't always a great idea. And I think being active is important. Like Deontay Wilder hasn't fought the best people in the world, but he has fought quite often. And it's kept him out there. Joshua's fought, what? So since Fury won the title,
three times. So
right?
Yeah, since he's won it, he's fought three times, and two of them were for, you know, one for the vacant title and then his title defence. So being active is important. So it keeps him, you know, it keeps him out there in the public's eye for the right reasons.
You've got that mentality then, as an athlete's mentality, haven't you? You're like, right, okay, a couple of weeks off or a week off, and then I'm back at it. And I mean, we can't blame Fury for this. The negotiations initially for the Klitschko rematch were quite long and drawn out. So you know, I'm not blaming Tyson for this, but it hasn't been an ideal first few months atop the world heavyweight division. Let's move on to some of the other news that Frank Warren dropped. Was that Liam Smith on September 17th will be going out to Las Vegas to challenge. No, he won't. Sorry, to accept the challenge of Canelo Alvarez, who drops down from middleweight, or from a catch weight of 155 pounds, to challenge Liam Smith for his super welterweight belt at the MGM Grand. It looks like being now.
Will that be at the T-Mobile, the new arena?
I've heard Frank initially said it would be the T-Mobile. I've since seen today that it's looking more likely to be the MGM. But wherever, I think it's going to be Las Vegas, and wherever it is, it's a hell of a chance for Liam Smith, isn't it? A fight it is for Liam Smith.
Yeah, my first thoughts at the news were just, wow. I think it's like it's a surprise in that you wouldn't have expected necessarily Liam Smith to get at this fight, but there is a logic to it in that if Canelo isn't going to fight Golovkin, if he has just been fighting a pound over super welterweight, it makes sense to move back down to super welter and fight a world champion. And you know, maybe other titleists in that weight class, maybe they're half a golden boy to pin down fights with. But regardless of that, I think this has got the ingredients to be a good fight. I like, you know, Liam Smith has an exciting sort of Mexican style of his own as well. He's not going to go running from Canelo, is he? He'll be a big underdog, but he's got the ingredients to make it exciting. You know, and I think this fight has gone down badly in America, because I don't think Americans realise that Liam Smith is actually really good. They just look at his record and see, oh, we've never heard of him, and he hasn't fought anyone we've heard of, and Canelo should have been fighting Golovkin. But it could have been a lot worse. I think Liam Smith will, you know, give Canelo a better fight than Amir Khan did, because I think he's not just going to be outgunned, over, you know, undersized, and be dropped by a single punch.
No, I think it's a fantastic opportunity for Liam Smith. I think it's a bit of a stretch at the moment to kind of call the upset, but I agree with everything you just said. I think the beauty of it is Canelo Alvarez is not like, okay, arguably he's the biggest international name in boxing, certainly for drawing power and what have you, but he hasn't got that air of invincibility that often comes with that,
yeah,
with that platform. He's looked beatable.
Yeah.
Liam Smith, no doubt Joe Gallagher, will fancy their chances. Of course, there's so many different things that could go wrong for Liam Smith over there. But going back to the American argument, in that they're not overly happy, looking at it from a very, very neutral standpoint, just looking at it as a boxing fan, that you want the best for boxing, does it give off the best signals that Gennady Golovkin is in Canelo's future? Because you would think that, because wasn't there some talk that, okay, we need to start building ourselves up to middleweight, the 160 pounds, and what he's actually doing is he's taking a step back to where he hasn't fought for a while. So it seems, in effect, he's going further away from Golovkin than he was just a few months ago.
Yeah, but isn't that the only way you can sort of justify not fighting Golovkin now?
To fight for a title in a lower division.
Yeah, and then maybe hopefully the fight after this will see him move up to middleweight.
But then that's highly unlikely again to be Golovkin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Highly unlikely to be Golovkin. There was some talk as well that perhaps the winner could be matched with Billy Joe Saunders. So maybe that is the route back to Golovkin. Canelo would beat Liam Smith. Billy Joe Saunders would then defend his title against Canelo, and then they will then move together for a unification this time next year.
Which is good for British boxing, isn't it? That if the Brits are taking on the biggest names in the world.
Canelo has got a habit of pummeling British fighters.
Yes.
Hasn't he? This would be his, would this be his fourth or his fifth? This would be his fourth if he was to.
So he's fought Ryan Rhodes,
Matthew Hatton,
Khan.
And now, so this would be his fourth. This would be his fourth, and then Saunders would be his fifth.
But yeah, but when Liam Smith does him.
What chance does Liam Smith have? I give him a. You've got to make him a fairly big underdog, but he would be someone that I would call a live underdog.
I don't see him being outgunned or overwhelmed, but I do, I see Canelo being the clear winner in this. Stop I just him. Think maybe not. Maybe it'll be a sort of gutsy, exciting battle, but I think Canelo will sort of beat him at his own game, really. But with the risk that Canelo stops him.
Okay, well, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I'm trying to get Liam on the phone actually for something I'm working on at the moment. So hopefully the next time we speak, we'll have some insight from Liam. But is there anything we've missed out? That's really just really all we spoke about. Really, what's happened in the last 7 days?
It's all been going off. In the last 7 days, two GB boxers won places at Rio 2016. So now Britain has a full men's team going to Rio for the Olympics with two women. So it's almost an entirely full team. There's just one possible spot that we've missed out on, but it'll be Britain's biggest ever Olympic boxing team, which again is good news for British boxing.
Good times for British boxing. Let's leave it at that. Thanks a lot, John. Good as ever to talk to you. Thank you, everybody, for your continued support. Please get involved in Boxing News this week. It's packed, as always, with lots and lots of goodies, and we will be back again soon.